All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're going way back, to 1985 to be exact.
Oh, wow, 1985. Big hair, shoulder pads.
Yeah, well, maybe not so much in the legal world, but definitely a landmark year for a specific case in corporate law.
Ooh, okay, I'm intrigued. Which one?
We're diving into SEC v. Carter Hawley Hale Stores.
Okay, SEC v. Carter Hawley Hale Stores. Sounds kind of dry. Why should our listeners care about this one?
Well, on the surface, yeah, it might seem like just another dusty old legal battle. But trust me, this case is anything but boring. It gets right to the heart of how companies can defend themselves when someone's trying to take them over. We're talking hostile takeovers, big money, and some pretty creative legal maneuvering.
All right, you've got my attention. Hostile takeovers, always juicy. So what was the big issue?
This case boils down to a really fundamental question. When does a company buying back a ton of its own stock during a takeover battle cross the line and become, legally speaking, a sneaky tender offer?
Oh, that's interesting. So we're talking about the line between a legitimate stock buyback and what the SEC considers a disguised tender offer. And why does that even matter?
Well, that distinction has massive implications for both the company and, of course, for the shareholders. We're talking potential violations of securities law, shareholder rights, the whole nine yards. And, you know, this stuff is still so relevant today. Anyone who's interested in securities law or thinking about a career in mergers and acquisitions, you got to understand this case. It's a classic.
Okay, so walk me through it. What happened back in 85?
Let's set the stage. It's 1984. The Limited, which was, well, a pretty big deal in the retail world at the time, sets its sights on Carter Hawley Hale, a big department store chain. They make a move, a pretty aggressive one, to acquire CHH. We're not talking a friendly merger here. This was a full-on hostile takeover attempt.
Ooh, a hostile takeover. So how did Carter Hawley Hale respond to that? I mean, I'm guessing they didn't just roll over.
No, they did not. CHH fought back. And they used some pretty clever strategies that ultimately landed them in hot water with the SEC.
Clever strategies. All right, I want to hear more. What did they do?
First, let's talk about the initial offer. The Limited put $30 per share on the table for a controlling 55% stake in Carter Hawley Hale. Now remember, CHH's stock was trading around $24 a share at that time.
Whoa, so the Limited offered a pretty significant premium to try and entice shareholders to sell. I bet that put a lot of pressure on CHH.
Absolutely. When a company comes in with an offer like that, it forces shareholders to really consider selling. And that's exactly what the Limited was hoping for. But CHH wasn't going down without a fight.
So what did they do?
They had a two-pronged defense strategy. First, they decided to bring in a friend, a very powerful friend.
Ooh, a white knight, huh? Someone to come in and save the day.
Exactly. They sold a big block of convertible preferred stock, a million shares to be precise, to General Cinema for a cool $300 million.
Okay, so that's a lot of money, and I'm guessing a lot of voting power too, right?
You got it. That move instantly gave General Cinema a hefty 22% voting stake in CHH. Suddenly, the Limited's path to a controlling interest got a whole lot harder.
Yeah, that'll definitely slow down a hostile takeover. But you said there was a second part to their strategy, right? What else did they do?
This is where things get really interesting and where the legal battle really heats up. Carter Hawley Hale launched a massive, and I mean massive, stock repurchase program.
Buying back their own stock? So how does that help fend off the Limited?
By buying back their own shares in the open market, Carter Hawley Hale started shrinking the pool of available shares for the Limited to snatch up. Less shares out there means the Limited has to work harder, spend more money to get that controlling stake.
I see. So they're essentially driving up the price and making it more expensive for the Limited to succeed. Pretty clever.
Yeah, pretty clever, but also very risky. And this is exactly what caught the SEC's eye.
Okay, so that brings us to the SEC. Why did they get involved? What did they have against Carter Hawley Hale's stock buyback plan?
This is where it gets tricky, right? Because companies buy back their stock all the time. It's a pretty common practice.
Yeah, but it sounds like the SEC saw something more going on here.
You're right. They smelled something fishy. The SEC's main argument was that this massive buyback program by CHH, even though they were doing it on the open market, actually functioned as an illegal tender offer in disguise.
An illegal tender offer. So they're saying it wasn't a legitimate stock buyback at all. But why? What made it illegal?
Because the SEC saw it as CHH basically trying to sidestep all those regulations and rules that are designed to protect investors during a tender offer. things like disclosure requirements and making sure shareholders have all the information they need to make an informed decision.
So it's like they were trying to pull a fast one on both the limited and their own shareholders.
That was the SEC's argument. They were basically saying, look, CHH is effectively soliciting its own shareholders to sell their stock back to them, and they're doing it on a scale and with a timing that looks a whole lot like a formal tender offer.
Makes sense. But I'm sure Carter Holly Hill had their own side of the story. How did they defend themselves against these pretty serious accusations?
CHH came back swinging. They insisted that their buyback program was completely above board, nothing more than ordinary market activity. They pointed out that they were buying shares through regular brokers on the New York Stock Exchange, just like any other investor, at the going market price. They weren't offering any special deals or sweetening the pot for shareholders.
So they were trying to paint a picture of themselves as just another player in the market, not trying to manipulate anything.
Exactly. They said, we're not directly going after our shareholders and twisting their arms to sell. We're not putting any undue pressure on them beyond the normal market forces that are already at play because of the limited's offer.
It sounds like both sides had some valid points. So how did the court sort through all of this? What was the key legal question they had to answer?
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals had to figure out if what Carter Holly Hale did, this huge stock buyback program, actually met the legal definition of a tender offer under the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, also known as the 34 Act. And trust me, that's not always a clear-cut distinction.
Yeah, I bet. So how did the court decide? What criteria did they use to analyze the situation? Did they just go with their gut, or was there like a legal framework they followed?
They had a framework, and it's a pretty important one. The court turned to something called the Wellman test, which lays out 8 factors to consider when determining if a particular stock purchase qualifies as a tender offer, even if it isn't labeled as such.
The Wellman test, 8 factors. Got it. Can you break down those factors for us and explain how they applied to Carter Holly Hale?
Absolutely. So the first factor the court looked at was whether Carter Holly Hale was actively and widely soliciting their shareholders to sell. And were they out there making a big public push, directly urging shareholders to hand over their stock? The court said no. CHH wasn't doing that. They weren't sending out letters or making phone calls. They were buying shares through brokers on the open market, just like anyone else.
Okay, that makes sense. It sounds like the court really paid attention to the details of how those purchases were made. What was the next factor?
The second factor focuses on whether there was a premium offered for the stock. Was CHH offering to buy the shares at a higher price than what they were currently trading for on the market?
Ah, so was there a premium? Because that would incentivize shareholders to sell to CHH specifically.
And again, the court said no. CHH was buying shares at the going market price, not offering a premium like the limited was doing. And that distinction really mattered to the court.
Right, because paying a premium can look a lot like trying to entice shareholders, which is a key characteristic of a tender offer. What about the terms of the purchases themselves? Were they fixed or flexible?
That's the third factor. The court looked at whether the terms of the offer were firm or negotiable. In CHH's case, the price they paid for shares and how many shares they bought on a given day depended on the ups and downs of the market. It wasn't a fixed price offer.
Right. So the price was fluctuating based on market conditions, just like in a normal stock purchase.
Exactly. Then the fourth factor asks whether the offer was conditional on a specific number of shares being tendered. You know, did CHH say, okay, we'll only do this buyback if we get at least X number of shares?
So did they have a minimum share requirement?
Nope, they didn't. They could stop buying at any time, depending on what was happening in the market and their own strategy. They weren't locked into a set target.
Okay, starting to see a pattern here. It sounds like the court was really focusing on the mechanics of the buyback and how those mechanics differed from a typical tender offer.
You got it. And that pattern continues with the fifth factor. Whether there was a strict deadline for the offer, you know, tender offers usually have a limited window of time for shareholders to accept. Was it the same for CHH's buyback?
So was there a deadline?
Well, CHH's buyback program was definitely happening in response to the limited's tender offer. But the court said it didn't have that same kind of fixed time frame. They weren't saying, hey, shareholders, you have until this date to sell your shares back to us.
All right, that's 5 factors down, 3 to go. What was next on the court's list?
Here's where things get really interesting and maybe a little more subjective. The sixth factor is all about pressure. Was CHH pressuring their shareholders to sell their shares?
Ah, pressure. That feels like a key element in this whole tender offer debate,
You're
right?
absolutely right. And the court made a super important distinction here. There was undoubtedly some pressure on TJ's shareholders. I mean, they had this huge offer from the limited looming over them. But the court said that pressure was coming from the normal dynamics of the market in a takeover situation. They actually used this great quote in their decision. The pressure was the pressure of the marketplace.
The pressure of the marketplace. Love it. So they were basically saying that the pressure wasn't coming from Carter Holly Hale itself.
Precisely. It was coming from the overall takeover battle and the natural uncertainty that comes with that. CHH argued, and the court agreed, that their buyback program wasn't adding any extra, untoward pressure on shareholders.
I like that phrase, untoward pressure. It suggests that there are normal levels of pressure in a market situation, and then there's this other level of pressure that crosses the line.
Exactly. And that's what the tender offer rules are trying to prevent, that excessive pressure that might lead shareholders to make a decision they wouldn't otherwise make.
Okay, that's six down, two to go. What were the last two factors?
The seventh factor asks whether public announcements about a stock purchase program came before or during a rapid accumulation of a lot of the target company's stock. So basically, was CHH being sneaky about their buyback program?
So were they being sneaky?
Well, CHH did announce their program, but the court didn't think that this factor alone was enough to label it a tender offer, especially since those other coercive elements weren't really present.
Right, because even if you announce something, it doesn't automatically make it a tender offer if you're not doing all those other things that we talked about, like offering a premium or putting undue pressure on shareholders.
Exactly. And that brings us to the last factor, which is whether the offer was for a fixed number of shares or for any and all shares. This is about whether the buyer is committed to buying a certain number of shares or if they're open to buying as many as people are willing to sell.
Okay, so was there a set number of shares that CHH was after?
Nope. They didn't specify a fixed number of shares they were looking to buy. It was all market driven, which again pointed away from it being a classic tender offer.
Okay, so the court went through all eight of those factors pretty carefully. What was the final verdict?
After weighing all those factors, the Ninth Circuit decided in favor of Carter Holly Hale. They said that the buyback program, while aggressive and definitely the big part of their defense strategy, didn't meet the legal definition of a tender offer under the 34 Act.
Wow, so they won. But that's pretty interesting, right? I mean, the SEC doesn't bring these kinds of cases lightly. They must have had a really strong argument.
Oh, they absolutely did. And it's important to remember that the court actually rejected a broader, more subjective test that the SEC was pushing for. They stuck with the more structured eight-factor Wellman test, which a lot of people saw as a way to provide more clarity and predictability for companies and regulators.
That makes sense. Clear guidelines are always a good thing in the legal world. So, what was the lasting impact of this decision? Did it change the game for companies facing a hostile takeover?
It absolutely did. The Carter Holly Hale case basically gave companies a bit more breathing room when it comes to defending themselves. It's a hey, you can use open market repurchases as a defensive tactic, but you got to do it carefully. You can't cross that line and turn it into a de facto tender offer.
So it's a delicate balance, right? Companies have to thread the needle between protecting themselves and not running afoul of those tender offer regulations.
Exactly. They can buy back their stock, even a lot of it, but they can't offer premiums or put excessive pressure on shareholders to sell. And they have to make sure they're doing it through normal market channels, not through some kind of backdoor arrangement.
That's a pretty important distinction for our listeners to understand. It's not just about the number of shares being bought back. It's about the how and the why.
You got it. And that's the key takeaway from Carter Holly Hale. It's not just about the scale of the stock purchases. It's about the methods used and the pressure, or lack thereof, on shareholders.
And I think this case also shows that corporate law is constantly evolving. Companies are coming up with new and creative ways to defend themselves, and the courts and regulators are constantly having to adapt.
Totally. And this case from 1985 is still so relevant today. It's like a foundational text for anyone working in M&A or securities law.
Absolutely. And it leaves us with a really interesting question to ponder. Given how much the financial world has changed since 1985, with all the new technology and activist investors and everything, how might the Carter Holly Hale precedent be tested and maybe even reinterpreted in the future?
Yeah, that's a really great question. It'll be interesting to see how those principles hold up in the years to come. And that's it for today's deep dive. Thanks for joining us. If you're interested in learning more about securities law, M&A, or the ever-evolving world of corporate defense tactics, there's a whole world of resources out there. Keep learning, keep exploring, and we'll see you back here soon for another deep dive into the fascinating world of law and business.